You were just saying how you need some new pants.
I haven't bought pants in a year and a half.
I was just thinking how weird it is, all this on the roaming podcasting that I've done, where I have recorded the last time that I bought pants.
Oh, that's true, eh?
I had the recorder in the store while I was trying on the pants. Like, I literally have. Those are the pants. I still have those pants, but they're very skinny. The skinny jeans, as is the style in New York.
Ah.
A little too skinny.
I don't know. Gets my balls all tight, you know?
So, yeah, it really does. I honestly can't wear underwear with them. It's fucking silly.
Wow.
They're I think, even one size smaller than skinny jeans should be.
That's fucked up.
I just never buy pants. I don't know how things work.
Now, if you start developing a rash, it's the pants.
Yeah. They're like my last resort pants, and everything else is worn out. But, yeah, they wouldn't let Ian come into the changing room with me, so...
Yeah. I wonder why.
Yeah. Probably a good policy. I mean, I'm not disputing the policy.
Yeah.
So, I'm here with my friend Brad, who I'm sure y'all remember from various past ham radios.
Woo!
Each more delightful than the last. And, we're gonna go get some coffee. And you know, it's weird. I really have reached the point where, I mean, it's only noon or something, right?
Right.
But I definitely feel a little out of it. And I just know, unquestionably, that I will be 800% more alert as soon as I have a coffee. Like, there's no question about it anymore. It's getting weird. My coffee dependency, it's probably not good.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's I had a Dr. Pepper first thing in the morning. And if I could, I would probably drink it all day. I thought of getting, you can order Dr. Pepper, caffeine-free Dr. Pepper, online.
Why in God's name would you ever want that?
Oh, because it's so tasty, right?
Right.
But if you drink the caffeinated stuff, you're pissing all day.
Yeah, that's true.
I am anyway.
No, it goes right. You know. When I saw Crank 2, I had to go to the bathroom 4 times.
Yeah, see, that's why I limit my caffeine intake. But I love Dr. Pepper so much. And I found with caffeine-free Coke that, yeah, I actually can just, you know, I don't need the caffeine. It's the sugar, and the sugar is good.
Right.
But you can get caffeine-free Diet Coke here, and it's like, no, Diet Pop is the da.
See, even just caffeine-free, that's like offensive to me when you see like Heyer's Root Beer and they're all proud about it. It's like, that's upsetting to me that you didn't put caffeine in this. I don't understand why you would do that to me.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, when I went to see Crank 2, it was my old Crank 1 thing because I worked at the theater. I would go to the little Starbucks downstairs and get one of their huge 24-ounce iced chocolate and mocha, whatever the fucks,
yeah.
And just like, yeah, watch Crank. I did that 4 days in a row.
Shit.
So I wanted to do that for Crank 2 to keep the tradition alive.
It's like the adult version of getting, like, you know, a big bag of candy. And
yeah, exactly. And it was awesome, especially for a movie that frenetic and retarded, but I had to pee 4 times. That was my final romantic day with Ian. It was my last day in New York, and
watching
I was like,
Crank?
Yeah, I was like, listen, I know this is our last day,
oh, Crank
but
too.
I really want to see Crank 2, so that's what we did. And I loved it.
You are easily the most romantic of people.
I like to think so.
Yep.
So, what was I just going to say? Crank, dun, dun, dun. This is where editing is handy later.
Ah, good.
I'm sure it wasn't that important. Coffee, caffeine, Crank. Huh. Anyway... While we're walking to...
I didn't get to see that. I didn't get to see Crank 2.
It didn't hold up all the way through. It couldn't keep up the pace. The ending fell flat. But it was... If Crank 1 was somewhere within the outer reaches of potential reality, this movie was way outside of reality in every way. They didn't even try to pretend. They just knew the very notion of a Crank sequel was so dumb that they were like, fuck it, who cares? Let's bring back every character. You'll just be the dead guy's brother. They did that twice.
Fuck.
Yeah, but they know they're doing it, you know, because it's funny.
I know, okay. Oh, okay, okay.
You know, it's like, what? I thought you were dead. I'm his brother, you know, shit like that.
Sometimes it's just really dumb, you know?
Well, I think you got to contextualize Crank.
Oh, where sure.
If you compare it to other action movies, what do you want to watch, Die Hard 4 or Crank 2? You know, are we going to be totally ridiculous, or are we just going to pretend we're a little bit serious?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to... it's like the Star Trek movie.
Right.
Right? Like, it was a fair bit over the top the entire movie.
Right.
Not, like, level, and then, like, woo, this is weird. You know, like, they had plenty of weird crap in it, but, it, you know, nothing that seemed really out of place, considering, you know, the whole movie as a whole, which I got to give them.
And it is, yeah, Trek Through the Stars. Even the name Star Trek is
very
silly.
Well, that was the thing. When I saw the title pop up, I was like, man, Star Trek is the worst name for a movie that is not about trekking through stars that I've ever, ever seen.
But yeah, there's no question that when you go with, established stuff, you can get away with so much more. I mean, that's all this whole superhero movie revival of the last few years. You can never get away with any of this if it didn't have all the comic books behind it,
No, true.
It's the only reason anyone accepts any of this horseshit.
Iron Man was good, though.
Yeah, that one maybe. That one you could probably get away with a little better.
Yeah. But then again, action movies have kind of... any kind of half-science fiction action movie is more or less derived from a comic book sensibility anyway.
Right.
Right. And yeah, Die Hard 4, was that... That was the, Live Free and Die Hard?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I kind of liked that one.
I never actually saw it.
Yeah, he takes down a helicopter with a car, and I thought that was pretty cool.
But I bet there's a lot of talking before and after that.
I can't remember.
Crank 2, no talking, no plot, no... It's like, it's none. It's amazing. It's really amazing. It just, wow. Like, every idea they had, they just could not possibly have said no to anything. Is the only way I can figure how the writing process to that movie went. Just when you think it can't get more stupid, it gets more stupid.
Cool.
It's awesome. So I guess we should go to the Smythe Street Tim Hortons, I'm guessing.
Yeah, if that's what you feel like.
I could go for some Tim Hortons. So on our way, you're saying you found out you have 3 copies of some album. So that de facto makes it your favorite album.
Yeah, well, I was searching through my CD collection looking for things to, listen to at work and the like. And I was like, hey, I've just found 3 copies of Bjork's Post.
Nice, that's a good album.
It is a fantastic album. It's one of several albums, but very few in the whole scheme of things, where I just think it's a perfect album where it's all the songs on it are great.
Yeah, there's tons of good stuff on that album.
It's like, Bjork, Post, that's one of them. Harmonium, Vanessa Carlton's album, that's good. Become What You Are, that is one where I think every song is good.
I agree.
Shame About Ray.
Yeah, another one.
At least one of the Mother Mothers. I like both of them. I like the
first one better myself, just because it's a little more... Yeah. It's got those jazz elements of like start, stop, weird changes, but without being a jazz record. Because I don't like jazz, I just like...
Yeah.
I like when things switch it up a lot. And the second album was a lot more... 4/4 standard, still very good, but
true, yes. Yeah, and I was like, holy crap, that must be my favorite album.
It's been some time since I've heard that album. I wouldn't mind listening to it again.
It's great.
I always remembered my favorite song being Enjoy. But any particular song you'd like to play off that Bjork album?
No, I think I played Hyper Ballad years ago.
Right. I used to actually give a shit about playing the same songs again, but now that I've done 77 episodes, it's like, who gives a shit? I don't mind playing the same songs.
Well, my personal favorite is Hyper Ballad.
Cool. Well, let's play Hyper Ballad. And that's just a good opportunity for me to throw in Liam Lynch's fake Bjork song.
Oh! Hey, I've got a version of Hyper Ballad by Aaron Smith, the girl who did One of the Boys there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I have a version of Hyper Ballad by her.
Oh, cool.
So we'll throw that on.
Nice. Yeah, let's do that.
Go.
And anyone who doesn't know the original, or go look it up on YouTube. It has a Michelle Gondry video. It's really cool.
It's awesome.
And I'll throw in the Liam Lynch fake Bjork song.
That's Michelle Gondry video?
I believe that one was him, yeah.
Cool.
I'm almost sure, because I know it was on one of those, masters of fucking music
way
videos.
Way fucking awesome.
Yeah, that guy is. He's amazing. And Liam Lynch's fake Bjork song, he does, he did the fake Depeche Mode song and fake David Bowie song and all that. And he somehow vocoders the shit out of himself or whatever the hell he's using that he sounds like Bjork. It's creepy because he's a guy. He shouldn't sound like Bjork. So let's listen to those in our imagination while we go get some coffee.
The song is called Hyper Ballad. Top of a mountain,
Every morning I walk towards the edge and throw little things off, like car parts, bottles, or cutlery, or whatever I find lying around. It's become a habit, a way to start the day. And I go through all this before you wake up, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. I go through all this before you wake up, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. It's early. No one is awake. I'm back at my cliff, still throwing things off. I listen to the sounds they make on their way down. I follow with my eyes until they crash. I imagine what my body would sound like slamming against those rocks. And when it lands, will my eyes be closed or open? And I go through all this before you wake up, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. I go through all this before you wake up, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. Safe again.
Safe again.
Safe again.
Safe again.
Safe again.
Safe again.
I go through all this before you wake up, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. I go through all this before you wake up, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. Safe again. Safe again. Safe again. Ooh.
Yeah.
As I like to do, because of the audio nature of this program, let's set the scene. This is very nice.
It's the back of the Beaverbrook Art Gallery, and there's a nice hill. And there, I think there used to be kind of a bunch of marble floor or something here, but
really outdoors?
Yeah, I think it was there. Oh, it's because they were gonna put that section up, right? Yeah, yeah, I'm an idiot.
So, but yeah, it's just like a nice little sunny little park thing, like yeah. Little tiny lawn in front of...
I can see your house from here.
Yeah, that's right, across the river. We're by the big-ass river, and there's these, like, stone table things.
Yeah, fountain-esque tables, you know? They would look not out of place next to a fountain.
Right. So this is cool, too, because Brad's got little speakers that sound quite nice, and a little USB, like, just put batteries in it, and then you can plug it into anything with the USB, and it works out in the world.
They don't include the little battery pack with it anymore. I looked. Huh. Yeah, like after Christmas they stopped doing that, which seems stupid. I love it.
Yeah, that's totally cool. I was just gonna say, I do remember one of my many arguments I would have with Ian about the relative merits of New York was about museums. Because I don't give a shit about museums, you know? And I was like, there's no reason to live in this shithole just for the museums. You come visit the shithole for the museums. Yeah. And one of my arguments, though, is everywhere's got museums. But this museum is not really the same as a New York museum.
This is an art gallery.
All right, well, I guess we don't have a museum then at all, right?
We have the... We have museums that are kind of pathetic in many respects, right? Like the New Brunswick Sports Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like fucking Willie O'Ree.
I guess I see...
They have like a wing dedicated to Willie O'Ree because there's nothing else to say.
One of those things like porn stores and sex shops, I never realized that they're not interchangeable terms, that an art gallery and a museum aren't the same thing. It never really occurred to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have a Salvador Dali.
Nice. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, they like to tell that story where, you know, it's like, well, it was originally written, or it was originally made to honor Franco. And then Lord Beaverbrook, Fredericton's lord and master, offered him $30,000 for the painting, and he was like,
I feel honored enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
who's
yeah.
Franco?
Franco, well, he was the dictator of Spain at the time.
Oh, I see.
I think.
So Lord Beaverbrook indirectly helped dictatorships keep their iron grip?
Or maybe. I mean, I don't know how much... No, Salvador Dali painted it to honor Franco.
Oh.
And then Max Aitken bought it from him, Lord Beaverbrook there. Yeah.
So
Franco didn't get the painting.
Aitken and Beaverbrook are the same person?
Aitken and... Oh, if you didn't know that until now, that's a shocker about Fredericton, because everything's named, like, Beaverbrook this and Aitken that, right?
Right.
They're the same guy.
So you get to pick a different lord name when you're a lord?
Well, yeah, his original name is Max Aitken. And, yeah, I don't know whether they picked it or the queen gave it to him or what the fuck was, right? But, yeah. Huh. You get rich enough, the queen gives you a new name.
And what kind of Canadian fucking name is Beaverbrook?
Well,
that's pretty brutal.
There's a place around here. I imagine it was like his favorite little place.
It's probably a beaver-filled brook, no doubt.
At one time, I imagine it was, yeah. I saw beavers working on a dam like many, many years ago. I took a walk out way, way out past Riverside Drive and into Noonan and shit. Like, yeah, I went down Riverside Drive so far, I was back in Noonan or something, right? And, yeah, I saw beavers working at 5 a.m. It was It's cool. And they are indeed busy.
Nice. Yeah. I just want to throw in as a side story what I was just telling you that, speaking of lords and mayors and whatever, about Mayor LaGuardia, who the airport's named after, and in Bushwick there's a little park named after him, that back when pinball was first invented, it used to be more like a pachinko type thing, and then they put in the flippers, but it was always in seedy bars and stuff, so they always just kind of equated it with organized crime, and New York outlawed all games, which then led to video games being outlawed for a while.
It's a great money laundering scheme.
Yeah, it really is. But
the quarters come in, they come in with no real traceability, and you go.
That's true. But this was whenever pinball was originated, I don't know, a long time ago.
Long, long time ago.
So they've got a picture you can still find at the front page of the paper of Mayor LaGuardia, who had just taken an axe to a fucking pinball machine, tossing the pieces in the East River, because they didn't worry about pollution back then or garbage in the river.
One pinball machine isn't exactly going to pollute much.
No, but it's still funny. It's still one of those hilarious 1930s or whatever type of thing.
Yeah.
So jump tracks, this is what I like to talk about a bit about. Get your thoughts on this.
Sure.
I was walking across the walking bridge to the north side, and I saw that classic thing that I forgot about a little bit of, like, the jogging girl who will get to the end of the bridge, immediately turn around and come back because the horrifying north side is so very frightening. And on the one hand, I'm like, well, come on, you could at least go up to the lumberyard, which I chronicled in my last video thing. You know, like, you know, there's a nice path. It's, like, very nice. What's the big deal?
Yeah, it's like you're not going to hurt if you jog all the way to Marysville.
Right. But on the other hand, there is a weird sense of insulation that I had about the north side that I don't think anybody else had, where the more I kind of look around and learn stuff, I mean, my brother is way whacked out. He's an extreme case of substance abuse, but he's not so out of place on the north side.
It's true.
I mean, he's worse. He could be their king, but but there's a lot of weird shit going on. And I can only figure that I missed it because my particular little stretch is quite nice. You know, across the street.
Union Street's very nice. I live in a retirement community, which,
But that's what I wanted to ask you about. Let's jump to you then first.
Yeah.
Is I figure even you probably had a better sense, at least of the hillbilly nature of this town.
Well, I mean, I live next to the trailer park that my grandmother ran.
Right. Yeah, like it seems like in Hammertown, there's quite a lot of hillbilly idiots.
They call it Hammertown. They still call it Hammertown, but that happened 67 years ago, right? The incident where the taxi driver got killed by the guy with a sledgehammer occurred 67 fucking years ago.
What you know about Hammertown.
What you know about Hammertown. Yeah, like every time I hear Hammertown spoken by someone under the age of 60, I think, that's ridiculous, right?
What do you know about Hammertown?
Yeah. Like, well, it's also the last guy they hanged in Fredericton as well, right? After he was hit by the sledgehammer, they decided he was such a bad... it's the other guy. But yeah, and the thing is, well, I remember in the 90s or something, there was a pretty bad crack problem near where I was, right? Like, you know, there were guys and, you know, what was his name? It doesn't matter what his name was, but, you know, there'd be a guy, they'd come into the store, which my parents ran, and it would be like, you know, my dad would talk with them about it. I never got to hear too many of the conversations about crack, but, you know, eventually, yeah, they were like, it's like, you know, we wish we could stop, but we just, you know, you get the crack and you put it in the Coke can and you take the lighter to the bottom of the Coke can, and, like, that's how bad, you know, that's how bad it was, is that they couldn't even afford crack pipes. Right, you know, they were inhaling crack through a Coke can.
That is one thing, man. It drives me bananas when people make these arguments of, like, you should legalize hard drugs and blah 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 and all these dopey bullshits. Cause I remember this one story that Erica, the girl I was dating in Vancouver, told me. She probably wouldn't want me to tell, but she'll never listen to this. But her older brother was a really nice guy. I liked him a lot, but he was a little perma-fried a little bit. And at his bad points with drug addiction, I don't know specifically what he was doing, but he biked 2 miles in the rain to his grandparents' house so he could break in and steal his grandfather's coin collection and sell it.
Yeah.
Like that much forethought and effort put into
one
stuff.
Hit.
Amazing, man. Just fucking amazing. Like, ridiculous.
Gotta be. I'm so glad I'm not addicted to anything I can tell to that extent.
Well,
right?
I even just had this little semi-argument. I mean, what's the point? So I didn't pursue it, but I was talking to my parents the other day about we were out eating at the North Star Sports Bar. Of course, they love it. That's the strip club for anyone who doesn't recall, but they obviously go on non-stripper days.
Yeah.
And I think it's because my dad is big into weed and stuff, so he's got to be a little pro-drug, but he's like, yeah, they should have, everything should be legal, and then they could work the programs and blah, 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 but it's like, imagine if there was the cocaine store. How many people, I probably would have, if it's just legal, you're out drinking and you can just stop into the cocaine store, and if it's just that accessible and accepted, that's just not a good method.
I don't like central nervous system stimulants, except for caffeine. They make me jumpy.
Yeah, the whole thing is, it'd be so mental. It's just like, but then they got to take the other argument. Well, the war against drugs doesn't work. And it's like, I know,
that's true.
Of course it
doesn't.
True. Don't pretend that's what I'm saying.
But. It's tough. I read a great article by, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Steve Yeeg. Y-E-G.
No, that's it. No, you got it.
Y-E-G-G-E. And, you know, he's a somewhat, I don't know, he's a programmer guy. And he had an article. He was like, have you ever legalized marijuana? And it was this great thing. And he was talking about how insane the idea of doing it just because of the logistics involved. He was like, look, I have smoked and inhaled more marijuana than anyone in this entire place, but legalizing it is insane. You can't just, you know, it's not as simple as going and stamping it legal, right? You have to, you know, everything, there's like, you have all the problems of alcohol and tobacco management, you know, in one thing. You know, because it impairs you enough. You have to have all the regulations of alcohol, and it, you know, is enjoyable enough that you have to have all the regulations of tobacco, and unhealthy enough, I imagine. Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. I imagine smoking marijuana is unhealthy. You know,
it certainly can't be.
There are
good
people.
For you.
Yeah, like that, smoke. Inhaling any kind of smoke can't be great for you, right? And certainly not great for your vocal cords. That's for damn sure. But his idea was like, yeah, he loves marijuana, but he's like, you're insane if you think you can legalize it that simply, or, you know, that it won't cost billions of dollars to legalize it in the States, right?
Did you know we have, speaking of that, we have government-made beer now?
Yeah!
It's like New Brunswick beer.
It's actually not bad.
And apparently it's the cheapest kind. Of course it is.
Oh, yeah, that's a grab right there, eh? Because they control the price of every liquor.
Yeah, so that's so weird. I haven't tried it yet, but my dad always buys it because it's the cheapest kind.
Yeah, it's not bad, you know?
Brunswick beer.
Like, I don't drink much beer because I'm allergic to fucking everything.
But yeah, so speaking of the North Side, I was trying to plot my own course because between talking to Terry and his stories of the fucking Bostonian and all their weird druggies that would come in there, and Cousin Dan, as we speak, is kind of living in a crack house because he was sort of got booted out of his old place, and the rent is like $230 a month. It's
wow.
Like, you can't beat it. But he's just like, I gotta get out of here as soon as I get a job.
Somehow
I just was really oblivious to all this stuff, and I think it's got to be just because in general, as a kid, well, I mean, my parents were kind of living below kind of where they should have been anyway,
because
that's just my mom's personality. She doesn't want to live in the fancy suburbs.
Yeah.
But they could have, they're
lawyers. Oh yeah.
And just not such a bad neighborhood, but I think the trick was really school. Because I totally missed South Devon, where all the natives went and all the horrible idiot kids.
Yeah.
And went to the French school, where everyone was fancy pants. Yeah. And then again, junior high. I remember you came back. You didn't do the Massis junior high route, but I did.
I didn't find that there was much of a, you know, I didn't find that there was much of a drug problem, so to speak, in Devon junior high.
Right.
Or certainly not at the elementary. That was, like, insane. That was wonderful. But, yeah.
But you were there for the later years, too, so it was no big deal?
Yeah, well, no, it was no big deal, yeah. But the problem is I had that kind of thing where, you know, nobody would offer me drugs.
Yeah, right? Well, me too.
Yeah, like, you know, who would offer me drugs, right? Like, to what end? Yeah, and I didn't drink, so, you know. I do now. That's pretty cool.
Like for me, like then I went from the French school to the other French school, which was all just preppy, fancy pants, Nashwauksis kids who I didn't care for at the time. But looking back, at least they weren't Devon hillbillies.
I fucking hated the people at Nashwauksis Junior High there. It was just, you know, especially in the French immersion program because, oh.
They were definitely dicks, no question.
Yeah, they were dicks. Now, I had problems that could, you know, that certainly, you know, needed some work, but you know, they weren't there to work your problems. They were there to exploit your problems to make you feel them feel better about themselves, right?
So, yeah, specifically that first year in seventh grade. Yeah,
oh,
I got bullied like crazy.
Seventh grade, yeah.
And you know what's funny? The main kid who gave me the most problems, he sent me an email 6 months ago or something. He's now a teacher or a teacher's assistant or something. And he's just like, hey, man, sorry, I didn't realize I was such a dick, and kind of apologized. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, well, I guess that's nice. But when I was hanging out with Terry's wife, Kelly, I went to school with in Nassau. We were in the same grade in like eighth grade.
Yeah, yeah.
So we vaguely know each other. So I was like, you remember this dude, Chris Skeed? And she immediately, without any prompting from me, was like, yeah, you know, that guy's a teacher now. He thinks he's changed, but he hasn't. I just think that's funny.
Yeah,
now I almost want to go have lunch with the guy to see, like, how do you...
If he's changed, like, or whether he's just, like, he's just one of those guys that no one tells that he's being a dick.
Right. But, I mean, he must have changed some ways because he was just a little short, angry dude, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You can't keep that your whole life, but...
No,
I don't
no.
think. But I thought that was very funny to hear that.
Yeah.
But then after junior high, then I went up to the high school where there was drugs and stuff, but I was just a drop in the bucket up there.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Oh, it was so great being a drop in the bucket in that place, right?
See, I didn't like it. I really
I loved
hated
it.
That.
I really enjoyed that, at least insofar as that was enjoyable, right? Like, it's much, much better to have nobody know who you are than to have a whole bunch of people know who you are and not like you.
Yeah. See, that might be true. Like, that's the thing, is I don't know what the other side was like. Because I'm sure going to a small high school is also horrible, but...
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Oh, well, that fucking building. Over capacity, 50%.
Yeah.
That was an unhealthy building.
Yeah, especially now that I've really learned the scope of how small this city is. Like, when I tell people how big my school
10%
is...
10% of the people in the city went to the school.
and that's the thing, is when you look at it on a North American scale, you can find lots of other schools with approximate populations, 2,500 kids. That's not so crazy. But it is when you've got, like, 50,000 people in your city. That's nuts.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the equivalent of having, in New York, like, one high school where a million people go.
Right.
Right.
Because, it would always be weird when I would bring that up to people. Like, you wouldn't believe the nightmare school I went to, and they would bring up comparable schools that they knew of or went to, and I'm like, But
cities have millions of people.
Yeah, but I didn't clue into that till just recently. Like, oh, well, there we go. That's where the fucking discrepancy is that this is a little tiny, tiny town, all things considered.
I did all my acid in grade 8. That was the old days when acid had names, flavors, as it were. Window pane, orange sunshine. But then things shifted. Acid stopped having names, and chips became flavored. That's progress. I can remember a time when you could get orange sunshine, window pane, or purple microdot, but the only chips you could get were plain, or in some stores, Ripple. Cut to the chase. I did all my acid in grade 8. I gobbled it right quick. I couldn't get enough of it. I did all my Southern Comfort in grade 9. One bottle. Ooh, what a night. This how Janice died? What a sickly way to go. And kinda sweet too, you know. Cut to the chase. I did all my acid in grade 8. I did all my hash in grade 7. Thought I was going to say 10, didn't you? Mm-mm. The thing I hated about hash, apart from the revolting taste, was the way it made your eyes stare inside your tiny little body, just sitting there listening to Uriah Heep. A little of that goes a long way. Same as acid, I guess you could say. Cut to the chase. I did all my acid in grade 8. It might have got low for me, but I never did eat no vegetarian chili. It might have got low for me, but I never did consume the Eastern philosophies, which I used to think, you know, was Eastern Canada. Fishermen's philosophies, as in, we'll see. Cut to the chase. I loved all my love in high school. I gave all my love to those three separate, cruel, cool queens. Shelley Warwick, Susan Moriarty, Tammy Gorgon Chuck, and now I walk around in a hashless, acidless, unsouthern comfortable haze, and as I do, I think about my income tax.
Yeah, so fucked up. But anyway, I remember the first time I kind of got an inkling of, well, I guess my brother was already getting kind of whacked out, and I really just paid no attention to him. I had my own problems.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, good old Cody that I lived with for that 1 year.
Yeah.
When Cody was telling me about how he'd go have the, I don't think, at Bugaboo, too. He's like, yeah, we're going to go to Bugaboo for the after hours and have a Coke party. And to me, the idea of cocaine was still very mired in, like, 80s movies and like disco scenes and things and just like some kind of at least flash and pizzazz.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, like it is. Fucking cocaine has been slumming it for a long time. You know?
Well, I guess, you know.
Like now that I know the true nature of the people who really do cocaine, it's not glamorous in the slightest.
No.
It's not Jem and the Holograms. No. It's Cody.
yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm sure Jem and the Holograms do some fucking coke too, but.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I was so disappointed. I was like, really? That's what cocaine has become?
That would be hilarious. A story of like the backstage Jem and the Holograms. Just like.
But this also reminds me, this kind of brings things kind of full circle when you mentioned let's head down here by the river, because I do remember one day, I was still working at the comic store, Cody wandered into the comic shop and he's like, man, I got a whole bottle of rum. Let's go down, sit by the river and drink this shit. And I was like, that actually sounds really fun, but I got to work so I can't. But I always kind of wished I could have.
Yeah.
He's got a kid now, just like everyone.
Fuck.
Everyone's got kids,
man,
all married.
I have got to get that vasectomy.
Yeah, for real, right?
Yeah.
Was it you that pointed out to me that down by Strange Adventures now, there's all these, like,
baby clothes
stores
clothes and
shit?
Clothing stores, yeah.
It's weird, too, right, when a city is small enough that you can actually physically see the demographic shifts happening?
Yeah. Oh, well, it happens during poor economic times, right?
Right, which I still don't believe we're in, but that's fine. I disbelieve to
all
my
right.
dying
oh,
day.
Oh, yeah, understood, you know. Mr. High School graduate.
Yeah, that's right. I found my food safe diploma from Vancouver. I don't know why I still have it, but to prove that I can serve a muffin to you without you getting Ebola. And it's the only postgraduate degree I ever got.
You know, I'm so tired of getting Ebola from my muffins.
Well, good. You won't from me.
Man, there's a girl in the muffin shop up at the mall. It's like, I wish I were, you know, 19 or something. That'd be great.
You know, that's one thing where I think I feel like I'm getting older is the...
I remember your comic about... That was hilarious.
Yeah, age 19 versus age
29. Yeah. That was sweet. I was like... Yeah.
With that was the one with... No, the one before that had the misspelling.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm thinking with the misspelling with the who's and who's, I forgot the Y on the end of my name once. So that's still not the worst I ever fucked up. I wasn't going to say... Oh, yeah. So, but about... I don't know. See, when I see... Like, me and Matt were at Dairy Queen last night, and the hoe train is still in effect. They still definitely go out of their way to hire hot girls, but they're all very, very young, and I just can't help thinking, like, I think Doug Stanhope had a joke about this, but just, I couldn't put up with you. I could not stand talking to you. Yeah. It's, like, not even worth it anymore. My libido has waned just enough that like...
Well, and it would just seem, it would start to really seem creepy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know... I remember when I was younger, I joked about that scene in the movie 13 where, you know, the guy is there.
I never
actually
saw that, but I think I've heard of the scene.
The scene is like, you know, where the two girls are kind of like, you know, are I don't know what the exact, you know, they're kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Getting banged?
No, they're partially seducing, they're trying to seduce him, I think, or at least it's certainly, they're making moves, there we go, they start making moves on him, right? And I was like, oh man, I know what's going on in his mind. It's like, man, if I add their ages together, they're 26. But, you know, now it's like, I was joking then too, right? But it's like, you know.
Man, to make a hyper obscure reference that no one but us is ever going to follow, but I was rereading Mystery Date, the Carlos P. McNeil
series. Yeah.
And I love the part where this chick in it is trying to get a better grade out of the teacher.
Yeah.
So she's like, I call this the crystal ball moment when the guy realizes, you know, what I'm offering and what his reaction is going to be. And the teacher's just like, what? And she's like, fuck. But yeah, I can totally see being in that moment where you're the dude who suddenly realizes, like, whoa, I could fuck this girl.
Yeah. It's like, and then you have to decide, is that a good idea? But even with girls, like, way older than the hoe train, it's like, Yeah. Yeah, it's getting there. You know, I'm like, yeah.
Even, I mean, I still regret it a little, but there was this really hot Asian girl. I mentioned this in the podcast I did with Stefan, who worked at the coffee shop, who was definitely looking for just a ESL boyfriend, but I just couldn't do it because I couldn't talk to her. You know, it was like talking to a kid because there's no language. And I wish I was just that guy who could just have sex and not worry about it, but it would have been so weird to me. And then I'd be that kind of jerk off where even when she went back to Japan, I'd be like sending her letters and trying to keep up the correspondence. And all this is running through my head. And I'm like, I don't want to do all that.
Holy crap. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So there, maybe we ran out of gas for now.
Well, sort of. Like, well, it's funny. Well, now we can get back to, you know, like I was saying about that that song we just played an hour ago.
Oh, yeah. We were going to.
Yeah. Right, well, right. That's why we started this up again. And it was the idea that I really like covers of songs where all the words to the song that are enunciated clearly.
Yeah, and Bjork especially. That song I knew most of the words to, but I think only because I listened to that album a lot of times.
And read the lyrics.
Yeah, I probably did at some point. Because
and of course, all the lyrics aren't there on the sheet necessarily all the time, right? Because how do you annotate a Bjork song? Hey, that will bring me to a great thing here. I have a song.
Oh yeah.
To play.
Well, I was going to say just about Bjork how she almost is just making noises sometimes, like Mike Patton kind of, not so much words. Like what was the very last words of that song? I forgot.
Safe again.
Safe again. I had no idea she was saying safe again.
Safe again, safe again.
To me it sounded like
say you love me.
Yeah, I
think that's actually in it
like
too.
That.
I think say you love me is also in there, right?
Yeah, like to me it kind of sounded like say that you love me, but I couldn't really tell. And but it's neat
I think it's both. It's like, you know, it's say you love me that transforms into safe again or something, or the two, or maybe she's person singing it in this version is fucked
doesn't
up
know
right
either.
Yeah
So does that segue us into a song?
Yes, it totally does. Talking about Bjork and noises, in fact, segues us into the exact same song I thought it did earlier, and that is it's off of her weird ass a cappella album, and this one's called Mouth's Cradle.
Cool.
And it's,
I think Mike Patton's even featured on that album at some point.
Oh, that would explain that. All right. So, yeah.
Bjork knows everyone who's cool. Like, she does all the cool music videos, and she works with all the cool people. It's cool.
Yeah, definitely. There it is. Yeah, I decided that this is probably my favorite one off of this album.
The purity of what he wants and where it dancing in infrared love. And you can use those teeth as a ladder up to Mouse Cradle. Mouse Cradle, you can use those teeth.
Your story already?
Oh, I haven't forgotten the story, but I forgot the name of the artist there. I think it's Elena Young.
See, if only we had fancy iPhones, we could find that out right now.
If I had a fancy iPhone, my life would be complete and perfect. Oh, wait.
I don't know that I ever actually said this on the show, so I'm going to say it now. My opinion on these iPhones. They're very cool. No question about that. But the plan, and even in New York, somewhat useful if you get lost or whatever in the tell me where I am function. Kind of neat. It would be fucking stupid to have around here, but in New York it gets complicated, maybe.
Yeah.
But in order to get the, as I understand it, you can get internet for free if you buy a wireless signal. Even if you just have an iPod Touch, you can get internet.
Yeah.
But on the iPhone, you can have internet all the time through your cell phone, but you've got to pay a lot of money. Like, those plans are, like, minimum $50 a month, usually more.
Yeah.
And I know a few people in New York that have got this plan, and they are not captains of industry. They are not the right-hand man of Donald Trump. They do not need this shit.
Do they even have, like, pretensions or aspirations towards such?
Not at all. No. They enjoy Twittering what they're doing out and about, you know? And it's not the intrinsic Twitter thing I have a problem with. I mean, what we're doing right now is, it's the same type of thing. We're just scrawling ourselves on the bathroom wall of the world.
Well, you are. Yeah, well, I guess I'm being by extension, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and you've got your Facebook updates and shit. You know, everyone's got their thing.
Yeah. But only people I know, you know, get those.
Yeah, so the point is, everyone's got their thing.
It's luxurious, yeah.
But that essentially...
If I thought I had an audience, I'd totally do it all the time. If I, you know, if I were as famous as Trent Reznor, I'd constantly be going.
But it
know.
Seems to me like that's really what this excessively expensive cell phone plan is for, is simply to Twitter. Little things that you're doing.
I guess, yeah.
And it's just not worth it. I don't want to hear anything about the economy until you get rid of your iPhone. I just don't. I'm not, no fucking, it just upsets me.
Well, I mean, the existence of iPhones doesn't preclude the notion of a bad economy, right? But I've been living here all, you know, like 25 years, and, you know, my entire life, the economy has been shitty, according to somebody's definition, right?
Right.
And now it just happens to be shitty by a lot of people's definitions, right?
And it definitely is. It's very hard to backpedal. Like, when I was in New York, I didn't have a cell phone for the first 3-4 months. It was right after I met Ian. I was like, I gotta get a phone, because how else can I talk to this person? And when I first got back to Fredericton, my phone didn't work anymore, so I sent it to Relic, and it was weird not having it. I was kind of like, hey, Dad, get me a phone on your plan. This is very weird. I don't like walking around not having the phone.
Yeah.
But their plan is almost up, and they're going to wait till they renew and sort it all out. But now that it's been about 3 weeks, I don't give a shit. Doesn't matter. People can call me at home. If they don't catch me, they don't catch me. Whatever. Yeah, you know, it's not, it doesn't matter. But I really
not the end of the world, yeah.
Right. But I felt that. I did feel at first like this is so uncomfortable to not have a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure everyone's going through that. But to them, it's like, oh, it's so uncomfortable not to have my G3 plan. It's so uncomfortable not to have my 42-inch plasma TV. Well, too fucking bad, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's that Louis C.K. bit. Everything is amazing and nobody is happy.
Right.
Right, you know?
Well, and people, yeah, people just, exactly.
It's like,
man,
did you fly through the air? You know, how quickly we become entitled to something we only knew we had a minute ago,
that's
right?
That's true. That Louis C.K. thing is the perfect example.
It is the perfect example. Yeah.
Those were simpler times, I think. I just feel like we may be going back to that, by the way. But in a way, good, because when I read things like the foundations of capitalism are shattering, I'm like, maybe we need that. Maybe we need some time where we're walking around with a donkey with pots clanging on the sides.
You think that would just bring us back to reality?
Yeah, because everything is amazing right now, and nobody's happy. Like, in my lifetime, the changes in the world have been incredible. When I was a kid, we had a rotary phone. We had a phone that you had to stand next to, and you had to dial it.
Yes.
You realize how primitive, you're making sparks in a phone, and you actually would hate people with zeros in their numbers, because it was more... It's like, oh, this guy's got 2 zeros. Screw that guy. Why do I want to... And then if they called and you weren't home, the phone would just ring lonely by itself. And then if you wanted money, you had to go in the bank for when it was open for like 3 hours. You had to stay in line, write yourself a check like an idiot. And then when you ran out of money, you just go, well, I can't do any more things now.
Right.
I can't do any more
things. That's it, yeah.
That was it. And even if you had a credit card... The guy would go, ugh, and he'd bring out this whole chunk, and he'd write, he'd have to call the president to see if you had any money. And
it's all true, kids. You had to call the president, It was ridiculous.
Yes.
Do you feel that we now, in the 21st century, we take technology for granted?
Well, yeah, because now we live in an amazing, amazing world, and it's wasted on the crappiest generation of just spoiled idiots that don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, ugh. It won't. Give it a second. It's going to space. Can you give it a second to get back from space? Is the speed of light too slow for you?
Yeah.
I was on an airplane and there was internet, high speed internet on the airplane. That's the newest thing that I know exists. And I'm sitting on the plane and they go, open up your laptop. You can go on the internet. And it's fast and I'm watching YouTube clips. I'm in an airplane. And then it breaks down, and they apologize, the internet's not working. The guy next to me goes, this is bull****. Like, how quickly the world owes him something he knew existed only 10 seconds ago.
Right, right.
And on planes... flying is the worst one, because people come back from flights, and they tell you their story. And it's like a horror story. They act like their flight was like a cattle car in the 40s in Germany. That's how bad they make it sound.
Right.
They're like, it was the worst day of my life. First of all, we didn't board for 20 minutes.
Right.
And then we get on the plane, and they made us sit there on the runway for 40 minutes. We had to sit there. Oh, really? What happened next? Did you fly through the air incredibly like a bird? Did you partake in the miracle of human flight, you non-contributing zero, that you got to fly? You're flying! It's amazing! Everybody on every plane should just constantly be going, oh my god! Wow!
Yeah!
You're flying! You're sitting in a chair in the sky.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't go back a lot. and it's
chairs
not really... You know, here's the thing. People, like, they say there's delays on flights.
Yeah.
Delays, really? New York to California in 5 hours. That used to take 30 years to do that. And a bunch of you would die on the way there and have a baby. You'd be a whole different group of people by the time you got there. Now you watch a movie and you take a dump and you're home.
Yeah. Nicer way to say it than that, but...
Benevolence, mercy, discipline. Benevolence, here come now. uplift your soul. Get your house in order. MCs be acting like they walking on water. I'll break you down like a poem wrote in haiku. Who you gonna lie to? Boy, I crucify you. Hammer to the nails, commence the impaling. My acid flashback, got everything trailing. I'm sailing blind on the open seas, like an overloaded boat of Haitian refugees. Send them on my knees, my face on the rug. One more prostration for my salvation. My gin's bucking up, it's got me fucking up. The call of my flesh and my soul won't mesh. So lick a shot when I heat up the spot. I'm taking on the halves cause I'll be the have not. Lick a shot when I heat up the spot. Boy, where you want to run when the gun get hot? Lick a shot when I heat up the spot. I'm taking from the halves cause I'll be the have not. Lick a shot when I heat up the spot. Boy, where you want to run when the gun get hot?
And just the way people spend money. I won't name any names, but Terry has a friend at UPS. This is how Terry got his PlayStation 3, is this guy's PlayStation 3 had a very loud motor, like a distractingly loud. He was going to send it back to get it fixed, but he couldn't be bothered. He just bought another PlayStation 3. This guy works at UPS, so Terry was like, well, how about you sell me your old PlayStation for cheap? And Terry opened it up and fixed the fan. Now he's got a PlayStation 3. But I've heard that story. Not because I don't want to pick on this one guy, but like with Xboxes, the Red Ring of Death, I've heard all kinds of people that just fuck it, I'll just buy another Xbox. Fuck it.
Man, yeah, like my friend Sean there, whose Xbox I now own, it was originally a Red Ring of Death one. He mailed it back to the fucking place, right? You know, he's at least sensible in that respect, and that's good to know. I'm glad to know I have sensible friends in a lot of, you know, places.
Yeah, and, well, again, not to name any names, but a certain mutual acquaintance of ours who got a PlayStation 3
and likes, buying movie paraphernalia.
Yeah, and just toys and dumb shit, and, like, had the PlayStation 3 first fucking week, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Dude's got no soul. No soul at all. You know, no ambition, no nothing.
It's just like, come on, people, get your shit together. If anything, it will do you well to not have all the disposable
income. Is he still dating that same chick?
Yeah, I think so. She's pretty hot, too. But yeah, there's definitely, I think, I think it's a valuable skill to have to not just want to buy shit all the time. Because it's very easy to fall into, and it's hard to reel it back, but it's worth it.
It's tough. There's always stuff I want to get, right? Right now there are three things that cost about $100 each that I want to get, but I'm not getting them, right? I'm waiting until either I have a really important use for it, or, you know, or I just have enough disposable income, and not just enough, like, I mean, not just enough to buy it, enough for me to go and say, oh, $100, okay, you know?
Right? In some ways, I think there's like a nice median curve that I'm not quite following, where sometimes it might take me too long to get something that really is helpful. But on the other hand, I keep thinking, like, you know, maybe I don't have the right equipment to make music or to video edit to my full capacity, but I could be working on a novel. I'm not. That wouldn't cost me anything, though, but I could, you know? It's like there's always something I could be doing. It's not. I still put the blame on my own shoulders.
That's good.
But there's extreme cases, like when I was in Vancouver and I didn't have a computer. I don't regret doing that, but it was interesting to not have a computer for a couple of years. But as soon as I got a computer, I started editing shit for Keith and Hemda.
That was much better, yeah.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you that story, though, of living like normal people, understanding what it's like for a normal person, where I didn't have the computer, I would just go into little internet kiosks once in a while, download some podcasts, get email checked, and I was just looking through the paper in Vancouver, and I saw George Romero, Land of the Dead, and I was like, holy shit, I never even heard of that movie, where that would be inconceivable in my old internet-connected comic book store working. I would have known about that movie 18 months early. I didn't know about it till it came out, and I was like, holy shit, that's what life is like for normal people. Movies just come out. They don't know about them. They don't give a shit.
What I find is that as now that everything is on the internet, I feel less connected than ever.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not than ever, right? But than ever when I've had the internet, right? Now that everything is fucking on it. Like, you can't type the name of anything that can be bought without the first 80 hits being someone trying to sell it to you. It's like, I want to find out about it, not buy it immediately. It's like, ugh.
Isn't there a certain niceness to that, too, though, that you don't have to... It makes it, for me, much easier to let go of my possessions. Like, well, all these comic books I've got... it was mostly only Dan who was like, you should hold on to these, but he couldn't give me any good reason why I should hold on to them. You know, it's like, why should I? Any of these, if I want them again, I can get them. They're out there. Someone else is holding them for me.
It's a primate attitude, you know, where just hold on to what you got and grab what you can, right?
I've been told Chris is going to New York for the weekend for an art show, and he borrowed some comics to read, and I was like, listen, if you have any problems with packing, with bags, like, oh, I don't have room for whatever because I got to bring back Keith's comics, put them on a park bench. Leave them. I don't want them. It's like, I can't stress this enough. I don't care. Do what you want with them. Don't bring them back. Don't ever feel like you need to return these to me. I don't know. Anyway, that was a divergence for no particular reason.
Yeah. When I went to get my Dr. Pepper this morning, there's this dog in the yard next to me, next to my house. And holy crap, like, the dog just barks and barks and barks and barks when it's tied up. And I've never seen it not tied up before, but they were having some sort of yard sale full of bike parts. And, you know, and the dog was just right there. And I was like, oh, that's the same dog that just constantly barks at me. Nice, very nice dog. I was like, hey, wow, yeah, you're really nice when you're not tied up. And I was like, that's very cool. You know, because I just hate that dog. Or I did, and until that moment, I hated that dog.
Well, that's fair.
You know, because I thought it hated me. But it was just trying to communicate. It was going, untie me. You have hands, untie me. Right? And I sympathize with that. And, you know, I already did, right, sympathize with it. I made my peace with the barking dog. Barks at everybody, so he must be just communicating to whatever he can there. You have an ant on your sleeve.
Oh, really?
Look at that.
That is Mother Nature at its best. There's a lot of flies in my house. Great, big, buzzy, stupid flies. They're driving me
nuts. The horse fly type thing. Yeah, there are a lot fewer bugs on this side of the river, I find.
Man, it knows that that's my hand, and it will not climb on it.
Oh, well. I guess he's gone now. I don't know where he went.
Variation in temperature, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And speaking of dogs, you see, I had this song that I've been looking forward to playing, because it's about a dog, oddly enough. And I'm not a dog person, and this was, like, it's the saddest song. And I'm not going to take the risk of not giving the preamble, because you could easily listen to it and not think much of it, right? Necessarily. I don't know. Maybe it's impossible to not be moved by it, but I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to take that risk. See, the story is, well, the artist there, who I believe is Elena Young. Young, she's an Asian-Canadian something or other, and she is big on bluegrass, and it was really strange. Like, you know, she did a show here. She was on a big tour. And it's so weird seeing her talk about bluegrass, and she just totally owns the identity of a bluegrass player, and she will constantly, it's the kind of thing I would actually find annoying if she weren't so good, right? She's like, oh yes, you know, I love bluegrass, and it's like she found something she liked and decided to own it, and I guess that's one way to go through life, right?
So having the Anglo-Sino-Alliance, three guesses what this makes me think of. Sounds like this chick came right out of Firefly. The Asian chick playing bluegrass.
Oh, awesome. Hey, wow, I didn't even think of that. Well, then imagine that. Imagine it occurring in a lonely space station, right? But this song is called Howl Away, and it's when she played it live, and it's a story about a dog, and the dog was part husky. And it wasn't her dog, but she had heard this story where, you know, the husky had just enough, like, coyote, wolf, you know, had just enough wolf in them that he would go out and there would be this hill and he would play with coyotes on the hill, right? And eventually the dog, you know, he got old and he died, or, you know, his owner buried him on that hill, and that night the coyotes came and howled.
Nice.
Missing their friend. And it's like the saddest fucking song ever. You know, it's like, holy crap. Because you think of that dog and you just think of the life that he had, and it's like, wow, you know? So yeah, that's the song.
One night in late November came the sharp coyote cries. Old Rebel pricked his ears and felt the pull of old bloodlines. For as the call persisted, my dog answered back, and he ran to meet that old coyote pack. Howl away, had I seen such a sight as a dog with the coyotes dance in the moonlight. Well, I could have just been dreaming, for he bore no scratch or mark, but for the tracks that covered my whole yard. Howl away, places no man would ever know. coffee, saw Rebel by the door, as if he'd been waiting there since the night before. So I buried him on Senka, where he could watch the full moon rise. His wild brothers circled the tame dog's grave that night and sang to him a mournful lullaby. Howl away, howl away. Can you hear the dog and the wild coyotes play? Howl away, howl away. In the magic hour, night turns into day. It's the magic hour, night turns into day.
Yeah, that was a nice little song. And at least we should set the scene here. We forgot to mention where we are.
Yeah, we're at the fake lighthouse.
The fake-ass lighthouse.
There used to be a real lighthouse here.
Really?
Well, like, there.
Huh, I didn't know there ever was a real one.
Maybe. Well, I could be full of it.
I mean, I don't know. Sure, maybe. Yeah. I guess people used to... That's the whole reason we're on this river, right? It's because there was actual river traffic back in the day.
Yeah, there used to be, like, a boat.
Back in the day.
Back in the day.
But, yeah, so the lighthouse is closed for the season, but we're just sitting on the deck outside, out front, and it's just so cool how once again we got the little speakers out so we could just listen to that song, and that's fucking cool.
Yeah. Oh, I always have a hard time not bawling during that song. It's like, oh.
There's, but that reminded me very much of back when the Firefly movie was coming out, Serenity.
Okay.
I read an interview with Joss Whedon where he was talking about they couldn't get the original guy to do, or the original guy didn't do the music in the movie, the guy from the show.
Okay, yeah.
Which is unfortunate because he was awesome. Greg Edmondson was his name. And he, but they didn't want a TV guy to do the movie.
Yeah, Guild
score.
Fucking dumbass, everything.
Shit like that. When Joss was trying to explain to this new guy what kind of music he wanted, he gave him a list of songs that he liked, you know, like go with this type of thing. And one of them was this band called Nickel Creek that is
Nickel
a bluegrassy type thing.
Is what is it?
Like a bluegrass type band.
Oh, okay.
Of some kind.
I think that's Molly Lewis's favorite band.
Could
or
be.
Or it was at one point, and that's...
I never did delve into them that much, but I remember they had this one song that I initially thought was just ludicrous, so silly, but after you listen to it a couple of times, it's another song that it's weirdly moving.
And
it shouldn't necessarily be. And it's told from the perspective of a lighthouse. And that's where I'm just like, what?
Wow. Okay.
So it's this lighthouse, and the lighthouse watches as his lighthouse keeper has all these crazy women problems, and the chick jumps off the lighthouse and kills herself.
Fuck.
So then the guy jumps off the lighthouse and kills himself. So the lighthouse is just sitting there going like, well, shit. And initially I was just like, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. But it kind of grows on you a little bit until you get, and then it's like, that's actually kind of sad, but silly sad. Like, I have a hard time getting behind it all the way. But, and I guess that kind of reminded me of it because of the bluegrassy elements and because...
Mm-hmm. We're at the lighthouse.
And we're at the lighthouse. But just, I guess it's people's attachment to animals, too, is part of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I understand
it. Oh, yeah. It's like the people were the lighthouse's pets.
Yeah, but like that song we just listened to about a dog who died. Dogs die. That's what they do.
Dogs do die, yeah.
And I'm certainly not immune to, you know, attachment to animals, but
But I try to it seems like, I don't know.
Well, I usually hate dogs, right? So it's very unusual for me, right?
I guess I just find it kind of, maybe it's just my show of things that annoy me. But, yeah, when people just get way too attached to animals to a point that is just ludicrous to me.
Well, when you start taking care of them like they're a kid, it's kind of, you know.
Well, I'm thinking specifically of my mom.
Oh,
we have a lot of dogs and cats in our house, all kinds. The whole backyard's a pet cemetery. Right now there's two dogs, and I can't tell if we have two cats or one cat, because they both look the same, and I don't know if there's still two or just one. Anyway, but every time one of our dogs would die, you know, she's just a mess. And I don't know, I guess, you know, you've had this dog for years and years, but it's a dog, where she's so very ineffectual when it comes to the matters of humanity, you know?
Well.
And it even got to the point where I was arguing with her about PETA, because I can't stand PETA. I think they're fucking retarded.
Boy.
And she gives them money and stuff. What was the latest press release they put out? Just to be idiot PETA people and get a press release in the news, was they asked the Pet Shop Boys to change their name to the Animal Rescue Shelter Boys or some shit. You know, just because they know it's dumb. But what was the thing where they suggested that that fish should be renamed sea cats or sea kittens, so that people would be less inclined to kill and eat them? It's the most lunatic organization. I can't stand them.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a Penn and Teller bullshit about PETA or something one time. At least I think that's what it was. And it was all this stuff about, it turns out that PETA has like this, they rent like giant refrigerator space for the dead bodies of the animals that they have to, you know, like kill after they rescue, because, or something like that. I don't, and like, I don't know. It's weird. I don't like to see a lot of, you know, I don't like to see a lot of, well, I don't like to see any cruelty toward animals or anything like that. You know?
And I definitely understand that with PETA, with these ridiculous things they do, it's just to get their
name. Publicity stunt, yeah.
But what bugged me more was like, well, for instance, I saw a PETA video Trent Reznor did, and I had no problem with it, because it was footage of Chinese fur trappers, and, you know, they'll put animals in these little cages
and
break all their legs and stuff.
Yeah.
But he was very calm about it, and he's just like, here's what's going on, here's the video, this is obviously not cool, help out. But these PETA magazines my mom would get went for the heartstrings so hard every time.
That's how you open the pocketbook, right?
I guess.
With the heartstrings.
It was, like, offensive to me. Of just, like, you know, the only animals that we were saving are the ones that can look sad, you know, that can give you a mournful look. And anyway, I just remember back when I was more argumentative, believe it or not.
Have I ever played you this song?
Yeah, this is Freeze Pop, right?
Yeah.
They're in Rock Band, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, hey, this is one of Brad's favorite bands, Freeze Pop.
Yeah, I like this song, Stakeout, there.
Yeah, we played this before on the show. But, what was I saying? Yeah, so when I was younger, in my early 20s, I was being a secretary for my parents, so I was just around them more. But
I
remember I was arguing about PETA one time, and the World Wildlife Fund and all that horse shit. But PETA specifically.
Yeah.
And it basically did boil down to
it's like you just shouldn't give them money.
Right. And it's the fundamental flaw in thinking that is never going to be, you know, until this is dealt with, there is no potential argument even possible, is that my mom is one of these people who honestly thinks the world would be better if there were no human beings. If we had never come to be and it's just a bunch of fucking bunny rabbits and deer and shit. And just a big pointless ball floating through space.
I think it would be better if there were fewer of us.
Maybe.
But, you know, that's a controversial point of view.
Was it better when there were fewer of us? I don't know. Probably not. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know.
See, and
Several influential men throughout history have held this point of view.
Yeah, that's true. Time man of the year. But, if anything, I mean, I'm sure I take far too much of the opposite tact, where to me, everything that's here is a resource for the great human race to use as we see fit, which is maybe too far in the other direction. But yeah, it's like there's this definite disdain. Like, that's where my problem with animal rights people is, it goes beyond let's be cool to animals into let's criticize and hate ourselves for being these horrible human beings, and the two cannot go together. You can't strike a nice balance and a kind equilibrium with animals if you think your own race is just a horrible destroyer. It's just...
You want to know how that works?
Yes.
Okay. Here's how the PETA thing works. It's like this. Okay. Now, no one can say, I think it's good to be cruel to animals, right? Almost no one does think it's good to be cruel to animals.
Right.
Right? Everyone agrees with it, right? You know, it's like, yes, it's bad to be cruel to animals. And so, when you have that kind of universal idea, it can be really easy to try and leverage other concepts off of that.
Right.
Right? So you go and say, oh, well, you know, all Jesus wants is for us to be nice to each other. And we're like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. And, you know, and no abortions. And right. wait, what? What? Well, you see, because it all implies that you're not being nice to the, you know, the fetus or something like that, right? You know, and so the same thing with PETA. It's like, you know, they're trying to leverage other concepts off of the idea of not being cruel to animals, partially to make sure that they still have, like, jobs. Because if they solve their problem, they lose their job.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, imagine you're the cancer researcher that cures cancer. And it's like, yay, hooray, right? But then you got to figure out what to do next.
Right, although right. I would think in that case...
Oh, you'd be very happy about it and, you know, yeah, you'd live.
You'd be of the temperament that you'd be glad to go move on to some other research.
Yeah, probably,
But PETA people do not necessarily have the drive and intrinsic, you know, sense of purpose that a cancer researcher might have. They're just yahoos, oftentimes.
Oh, yes, exactly. Or maybe, I don't know. You know, I know a lot of the, you know, like, you know, a lot of vegetarians I meet, you know, I like a lot of them. I tried becoming one a couple times. No, it's not working. But and it's because I can't argue with the idea. Yeah, you know, it is better to not eat meat. I can say that. I can say that and then eat meat afterward. Right. And I'm fine with that. You know?
I really think if I had someone, a vegetarian, preparing all my meals, I would eat them. Sure. Why not?
Because I would have trouble because there are a lot of vegetables I really, really just can't eat or stomach for whatever reason.
Middle Eastern food is like would be my secret weapon because I oftentimes by accident eat a vegetarian meal. You know, shawarma part. You just get rid of that. Everything else is fine.
There was a wonderful like rice curry thing that someone made like way back when I was in university for some sort of charity thing. Man, it was excellent, right? And I'm sure there was no meat in that.
Right.
You know, there was like, you know, it's like it was just delicious. So yeah, like there are things that can be done, but I just don't know what they are, you know.
There's a joke in The Simpsons since Lisa's a vegetarian that Marge has been like sneaking beef broth into all of her stuff just so she'll get some meat. I like that. But I'm looking forward to, I'm sure by if this ever happens in my lifetime, I'll be so old that I'll forget I ever thought this was important. I won't care because I'll be facing down death instead. But, you know, because the way out is always through. Eventually, we'll just have artificial meat that we grow in a fucking lab somewhere that never had a brain or feelings attached to it in any way. And, you know, it'll be fine.
That'd be nice, yeah.
But I know there's still going to be some vegetarians that are holding on to the vegetarian
ethos
without knowing why they're doing it. I'm supposed to do this, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, they might go and say, oh, well, you know, I don't like that. You know, there are people who just don't like the taste of meat. I know it's hard to imagine, but I actually, like, don't really like the taste of steak.
Right.
Right? Like, you know, I don't mind little bits of ground beef in places. I like pepperoni, right? But just steak... You know, I don't like it much anymore, and it can be prepared in a way that I do enjoy. I believe that. But it rarely is, and, you know, like, I would never go out and buy steak. It's like $18 for, like, a piece of... And that the price is also a bit, but the price is not the major factor. If I had all the money in the world, I wouldn't spend it on steak.
They never got into it much in the movie, but in the book more, Mark Renton from Trainspotting. He's that way. He just doesn't like to eat meat, but he likes to hurt animals. And that's obviously just Irvin Welsh just making a character that's deliberately a jerk off.
Yeah.
But that's like one thing a couple of people around here have told me, so I'm assuming it was true, is that in this part of the world, since lobster is so prevalent that we have the McLobster season permitting, but is that back in the day, the poor people ate lobster. You know, you were poor if you ate lobster.
Because it's a bug.
Yeah, and it's everywhere, and it's like, it's a horrible infestation.
I know the lobster is not a bug, but...
It's a bug of the sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Bats aren't bugs, to reference Calvin and Hobbes.
Man, I tried reading Calvin and Hobbes again. You have to be in the right mood.
I found that with The Far Side. I started rereading it, and it's not as brilliant as I remember. Yeah. Some of it just isn't funny. But they're still the best, you know? Those are still excellent comics, no question.
Yeah.
I am a lighthouse, worn by the weather and the keep my lamp lit to warn the sailors on their way. I'll tell a story, paint you a picture from my past. I was so happy, but joy in this life seldom lasts. He helped me warn the ships at sea. We had grown closer, tell his joy meant everything to me. And he was to marry a girl who shone with beauty and light. And they loved each other, and with me watched the sunsets into of me he ran.
and the wind. And though I'm empty, I still want the sailors on their way.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's it. Is that, you know, we'll move on.
Well, I suppose, yeah, it's... Yeah, what I was going to say is, you know, people, you know, leveraging other concepts. And I think a lot of people become vegetarians in order to exert control over the people around them, like their parents and things like that. Because the problem is, it's like, how do you argue with, like, if you're affluent enough, it is hard to argue with an 11-year-old girl who says, I don't want to, you know, do that, right? You know, and if they feel that, you know, that if they feel a loss of control and a sympathy, or empathy rather, with the animals that are being eaten, it's like, you know, how do you argue with that, you know? And that gives them, you know, so they the vegetarian of the family gets a little more attention than maybe they would get normally.
You know what's funny, you know? It's weird that
it's not all of them. Don't ever think that, but, you know.
But I'm sure part of it is, a power trip thing.
Yeah, part of it is a power trip thing. Yeah.
It's funny that I equate these in my mind, but the fact that, like, being poor and not having money is mildly fun to me. Like, let's try to make do. Like, it's a fun
it's
game.
Because you got that giant cushion to land on.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. With my parents and stuff. But I'm thinking the same thing. Like, if I had a kid who decided she wanted to be vegetarian, I was like, that sounds fun. Sure, let's try it. But I still see it the same way as, like, I am downgrading my life here. But let's give it a shot. Yeah, why not? It might be fun.
Yeah, totally.
I guess, and PETA's not as bad for this as environmentalists are, but it bugs me the idea of progress through pulling back, because that never works. That doesn't, you can't slow progress. If anything, it's the progress that will push us through, you know?
Yeah, or we'll hit some sort of plateau and everything will degrade. And I think the key there is to degrade slowly.
I was just talking to Dan when he was talking about, like, wouldn't it be neat if you ran the comic store, you know, if Derek had moved on, and I was like, oh god, no, that'd be awful. I'd be stuck in Fredericton running a comic store. And he's like, well, you wouldn't do that? Like, what if tomorrow you could run the comic store? I was like, are you mental? Now that I've left, of course not. Plus, that whole ship is sinking. And he doesn't believe that paper is going out. You know?
Oh,
well, of
man.
Course it is.
Okay, paper is... I've been very skeptical about, you know, the loss of paper in our lives, right? My, you know, because I've heard it since the 80s, right? And, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to have the paperless office. And it's like, it's only recently that we have anything close to a paperless office. I can't print anything. We never have any fucking paper. Anyway, but, you know, yeah, the myth of the paperless office, the myth of the paperless world, I always thought until fairly recently. Now that they have, I have seen, oh, man, well, I haven't seen, I wish I could see it for myself, right? But, okay, color... e-paper, as they call it, right, which uses, like, it's actually a kind of mechanical process where little tiny bits of pigment squirt out of holes in the, oh man, it looks so cool, and apparently they've got it, 30 frame a second paper.
Nice.
Right, in color, and I've seen some pictures, and I was like, that's the end of paper. You know, as we, you know, that is the end of paper, thank God. You know, because that'll be cool, right? Like paper, electronic paper has to have almost everything that normal paper has, and this will be a sufficient replacement, I think. Right?
I think it's funny how in virtually all fields, because I'm thinking of another example now, but it's when you know, these groups that are whining and complaining and we got to slow down and reel back. Yeah. It's always the pushing forward that gets us through. I mean, this is what's going to make us stop killing trees. And the other example I'm thinking of is how totally silly it seems in hindsight, like when Metallica got upset at Napster and like, wah, you got to stop. And then when they started literally suing users.
Yeah,
so instead of being music fans, suddenly you're outlaws. And if they had just kept their heads on, you know, obviously iTunes is doing just fine. Everything is moving in a normal, fine direction. And now when you look back, they just seem stupid. They just seem like they're trying to hold back a fucking flood with themselves, with their one body.
Yeah, well, they got, I don't know if they, like, they didn't get the kind of publicity that, you know, they say there's no such thing as bad publicity, and admittedly we're talking about them now.
Yeah,
right. You know, and we think back to their back catalog, we go, yeah, that was That was fun stuff. Maybe I'll go listen to Enter Sandman tonight, right? That, you know, and so maybe there is no such thing as bad publicity now that I think about it, right? Because we're sitting there, what dicks? It's like, oh yeah, but I like their old stuff, so let's go. Yeah, I was never a huge Metallica fan, but I do like some of their old stuff.
Nor was I.
Yeah.
But in all these cases, I mean, it's like, instead of the move, you know, TV industry freaking out about torrents.
That'd be awesome, because like the...
There's Hulu, you know? It's like,
Just,
it doesn't work in Canada, but...
No, but... Yeah.
But, you know, just, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I just think if everyone would just fucking relax a lot, it would do them a lot of good.
It's tough, you know. But yeah, the whole e-paper thing, that is, It took until like about a couple weeks ago when I saw this demo of this technology, you know, where they have... A couple weeks before that, I saw a demo of a lesser technology that I was like, there, that's the end of paper.
Right.
Right? And now they've got it, you know, even better than what I saw a month ago, like two weeks ago. It didn't take the 2 weeks. It was just a matter of it getting revealed and stuff, right? But yeah.
I think my mindset is...
e-paper until then had been dark.
But right? I think my mindset's a little different in general, because I always attribute it to growing up in this perfect curve where my first game system at home was Radio Shack Pong, and I got to watch everything. You know, now we have these iPhones that literally seem like a special effect happening in real life to me when you see someone watching a TV show on this little thing in their palm. So I don't need the hard proof of the e-paper. 10 years ago, I was convinced that things will get to a point.
No, I was never convinced, because paper is, you know, just so...
You don't just presume at this point that things have gone so crazily well so far that they're going to...
I mean, it's... never consider that anything will continue unabated. No, because, I mean, we're... You know, it's actually more environmentally friendly to use more paper than a lot of the other stuff, right? Because it's a fucking tree, and it grows, you know? Like, it's a natural resource that actually does renew if you do it right. And, you know, any idea... I remember people were saying, oh, plastic things were more environmentally friendly than paper at one point, and, you know, that's... Like, what's true when it comes to environmental friendliness? We don't know. We'll never know except in retrospect. So, what do you do? I don't know. Just gonna keep going as best I can, and try to do as little harm, I suppose, as I feel is possible. Or reasonable, I guess. Not possible. I could just stay in bed all day if I wanted to do as little harm as possible. So yeah, it's like, yeah, are you gonna progress, or are you gonna stay in bed all day? I guess that is the question that you have to ask.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't presume, because the problem is, like, things are slowing down a bit in terms of technology. We keep coming up with new ways, and that's, you know, that's pretty cool. But like the chip speeds doubling, computer chip speeds doubling every 18 months stopped happening, right? And the best they can do now is to start sticking more processors and work out ways for that. And yeah, I say they're working ways out, but is it doubling every 18 months just as a natural course? No, which it was doing for so long, right? Because you just... You know, you'd keep shaving bits or parts off of the chip pathways by making them smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and then eventually
things though still seem to be barreling along pretty well. Like the PlayStation 3 I was reading about the other day, when it first came out, they were losing like $250 on each one, and now they're actually making money on them because they take a long view,
you know.
And even in just in the last 3 years, like the price of it has dropped. The manufacturing price has gone from $800 to $400, you know. So,
Yeah. I still wouldn't get one. But.
You know, I'm going to go so far as to say that I'm not worried about anything. I mean, you know, even all this like overpopulation
not in terms of environmental or catastrophe. I don't think you are. No.
Well, even as far as like overpopulation is the big thing. If you want to worry about something vague and indistinct and feel all upset for no reason, that's a good one people go for.
Really?
But this guy
hard
Thomas
to tell
Friedman.
Around here.
Well, this guy Thomas Friedman. He wrote a book about flat world type stuff. The World is Flat is a big book. He's got a new one that I haven't read yet. But he's got some fairly convincing arguments that once we hit 10 or 12 billion, it's going to level out. It's not going to just keep growing until we're all dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. Yeah. I can live with 12 billion. Who cares? Whatever.
And the same thing with technology. It has, you know, you know, when we hit 10 or 12 billion people, the technology will probably level out a fair amount as well. And there's something to be said for living in an era with flat technology curve, right? Because, you know, then you have people using stuff more creatively. And there is definitely an advantage there. It's also an advantage to poor economic times from the point of view of art, etc., because, you know, people are making more creative use of what's available, instead of just pumping money into, you know, whatever the next thing is, right?
Well, without having any real hard info and without really having a very clear global sense of things, I don't know, I really don't. I would be surprised if technology noticeably flattens until we're very, very old. I mean, there seems like there's so much that can still be done, and there's
Yeah. It won't seem like it, but and you know, they haven't discovered a new plastic in 40 years, right? So, you know.
But there's also so many more people that are now that the world is flattening, and it's not just North America leading the charge, that are now available and able to progress in these myriad of different paths. That I think that alone will help keep things in gear for a while.